Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we talk about estate planning, elder law, Medicaid, and answer your questions. You can call in and ask your questions at any time. It's 518-476-5900, and we would love to hear from you. How are you doing this morning, Kim?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Pretty cold out there, but hopefully it's one of the last really cold weekends. It's going to be 60 tomorrow.
I know. And rain. Wah, wah,
wah. Well, the rain part is bad, but the warm up part is good.
Yeah, it's just so weird to make these jumps that we've made, you know? But I guess we'll take it because we are turning into spring. And like we were just saying with Ben, we turn the clocks ahead next weekend. So I always love that because we'll be light longer during the day, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, no, I love it when it's light later in the day. That's going to be great.
Exactly. And today we have a guest with us. We have Melanie Pratt from Choice Connections. Good morning, Melanie.
Good morning.
I hope
Thanks
you're well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I am well. Yes.
Good.
And I am looking forward tomorrow for, I'm really looking forward to tomorrow, even though it's going to be raining, just because of that 60 degree mark.
Right, right. It's been a long time since we've seen that.
Yes.
Now, right. Tell us a little bit about Choice Connections and what it is that you guys do.
Sure. So Choice Connections is a free senior housing advisory service. So we're housing advisors. I have two partners, Renee Birnbaum and Robin Klink. We manage, you know, the move to senior housing. Usually we're working with a son or a daughter, but often it's nieces, nephews, or the senior, him or herself. So when someone calls us, we go through a needs assessment and really narrow down what the options might be, whether it's a senior independent living apartment or assisted living. And we do work with all levels of assisted living. So regular, you know, an adult home or family type home, assisted, enhanced assisted, memory care. We do give counsel on nursing home placement, but we do not facilitate nursing home placement.
So that's great. So when you're talking to a family, Melanie, how do you help them determine whether they need an apartment or an assisted living, you know, and I guess what's the difference between the two for people who don't know that?
Good question. Senior housing is, as you might guess, senior specific housing. And there are apartments that are, you know, 50 and over. Some are 55 and over. Some are 62 and over. And there are just a large variety of differences in amenities between the apartments. So whereas one might be strictly senior with really no other amenity, it would be like any other apartment you might rent, all the way up to an apartment that provides three meals a day and housekeeping, you know, that's the other side of the spectrum where there's a lot of services included in the rent and, of course, still senior-specific. So on that far end where there are many amenities, such as the meals, transportation, housekeeping, activities. Many times a senior may really just do well in that setting instead of transitioning into a full assisted living. So I would say that assisted living, for those who don't know, are licensed facilities. They provide all of them, whether it's an adult home, family type home, assisted living, memory care, they're all going to provide three meals a day, housekeeping, laundry services, transportation, and activities. But on top of all that, those amenities, all of the licensed facilities will have 24 hours a day caregivers available. So they'll be in the building and they'll be, you know, responding to your need at any time, day or night. In an independent living, though the amenities may be similar to assisted living, the big difference will be there will not be staffing in the building 24 hours a day, right? Or aides, you know, caregivers in the building that 24 hours. So we really have to make a determination as to what the personal needs are, right, of the senior. And the family helps with that, right, with what sometimes even if independent living is very appropriate, but yet they're kind of borderline with care needs. Family may choose assisted living to be proactive so that they don't have another move down the line.
Right.
So it really is, yeah, it's part of the needs assessment.
That's right. So you must tour and know a lot of facilities. What in the area, what regions do you cover in terms of these facilities?
Well, yeah, I started Choice Connections in 2008. And at that time, I was serving Schenectady, Albany, Rensselaer, and Saratoga counties. And for the most part, that is where we work. There is, you know, a host of options in the capital region. But then we started reaching out, you know, more toward the North Country, so Warren and Washington counties. We started heading just over the border into Vermont and Massachusetts. For those who may be in Rensselaer County and maybe head that direction, or in Greene or Ulster County, Greene or Columbia County, I should say. For Columbia County, they may be right across the border. And so we started working with a few beautiful communities out that way. And really, I give most of the credit for that to my partner, Renee Birnbaum. She started working with me about 5-6 years ago. And that enabled us to have the time and energy to go and really look at some other options for seniors. And so we keep going, you know, we head out toward Amsterdam. We work in the Amsterdam and Johnstown areas. It's just hard when you head out into the country for options, right? If you're in Schoharie County, for instance, right, it's challenging. There really aren't a lot of options. So many of the folks in the outlying areas of the capital region end up coming toward the capital region for their senior housing options.
Well, that makes sense. There's just more, as you said, more options, more availability. So what are some of the challenges you face? I know some of the challenges Kim and I face when seniors need help is maybe they don't recognize the need or they don't want to make a move.
leaving their home, which is understandable. Is that something you encounter, and how do you work through that with families?
Oh, yes, that is probably problem number one. As you can, you know, a move to senior housing is challenging, even in the best of scenarios, right? Where the senior does see the need of moving and has a desire to move, it's still very challenging. And that's where we're really holding the family's hand through that process, those steps. And really trying to pull in other resources as well for the family, such as Herzog Law, to work on different aspects that you have to get prepared for. But if a senior says, no, I do not want to move, really there's, unless there is a doctor that deems that person unable to make their own decisions, there's not too much a family can do.
Right.
Usually, I will say this, I heard this long ago from a colleague, that assisted living is driven primarily by some type of emergency. Mm-hmm. It's sad to say, but usually when a son or daughter, niece or nephew, or the senior themselves calls me, it's because something just happened within the last few weeks or months that made them say, wow, I might need a different environment. Mm-hmm. So it's the, you know, a lot of times when a family member calls and says, you know, my loved one is, she's had a number of falls in the home, and I'm very concerned, but she doesn't want to move, and I don't know what to do about it. I just counsel really for patience and understanding, and we often will start with home care even, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times we do refer to home care to start out, because if someone is just starting the need for a little bit of help, whether it's for personal care or for meal prep or transportation, they often do start at that level with some home care. And that might get the ball rolling where the senior starts to accept help. And then maybe often once the home care is in place, not always, but often the senior starts to realize that they would like to have, they're okay with somebody giving them a little hand, and maybe I'd like to be in a more social setting and not have to pay all the bills of this house, you know. But then other times, and I don't want to sound negative, but other times there is an incident, right? Even though home care is coming in, let's say 4 hours a day, something happens while they're not there. And then the family, and then they say, well, we need 24-hour a day supervision, custodial level, 24 hours a day. And that precipitates that move to assisted living.
Thanks. We are talking to Melanie Pratt from Choice Connections. If you have any questions for her or for us, you can call us at 518-476-5900. Melanie is a wealth of information about different housing options in the area. And they're not, I know Kim and I have been to a lot of them, and some of the independent livings are really nice, Kim, right? I wouldn't mind going there myself.
Well, anymore, it's funny, as we work with seniors and we start kind of talking about other options, particularly now in a time where home care is so hard to secure. And we talk a lot to folks about how important it is to sort of maintain relationships with people, and how bad the isolation really can be. And so looking at a community that offers so many things, and, you know, it's like being on a cruise ship that
right
is, yeah, all the time, because the level of activity that is happening, I mean, it's wonderful to see, and not only, and particularly now as we're starting to open up, to be able to see people, you know, taking trips again, and just being able to share a meal with somebody, and just not be stuck in the house a lot of times. So, Mel, I think one of the biggest challenges I have in talking with families, and you and I have worked together for years, and I appreciate so much the amount of time that you take with a family, and talk about your process a little bit, because, I mean, there are other senior housing placement advisors out there. But one of the things that I appreciate so much about you and Renee is that, the number one, the amount of time you've spent with the communities that you contract with. And number two, I think just the amount of time that you spend with families and really screening them and really working with them. And it's not, you just don't give them a list, you know. So talk about your process when you're working with a family.
Sure. Yeah. When, like I said before, when someone calls, I take a needs assessment. And often that assessment is quite a lengthy process, because the caregiver who is usually calling has quite a story to tell, right? They talk to me about what has been going on, and sometimes that's years of caregiving that they've been providing. Or they just love their mom so much, and they tell me all about mom, right? And I need to know that. I need to know the likes, dislikes, wants, desires, right, of the senior plus. I need to know the medical side. I'm not a nurse, but I do know the licensures and what an assisted living can and cannot provide in terms of care. Again, you know, if there is a borderline issue with medical care, I reach out to the communities and get it clarified, because each community, of course, is there, you know, they're the expert on their care. So, but I can easily get information for families on the medical side. So, you know, wants, desires, location, you know, many times a son or daughter will live in a different town or a different state than their loved one. And so, of course, location is a big factor. And so after gathering all that information, that's when I'm able to start making recommendations. And, you know, so the recommendations are just that. They're, you know, I think this may be a nice fit. And sometimes I, you know, it might not be the ideal location, but it fits all the other boxes, right? Or it may be the perfect location, but doesn't quite have the licensure, let's say, that that person needs. And so I'm really saving families a lot of time by going into the detail of what a facility, or even an independent living, you know, what amenities they provide. So really my goal is always to save the family time, but it does take time to save them time. I just want to mention that we do work, we always ask in the needs assessment about whether a senior is a veteran or a widow of a veteran. So I don't know if you guys were going to talk about that, in the program, but if they are a veteran or widow of a veteran, of course, we're not veteran pension experts, but we do kind of go through the parameters of whether a senior might be eligible for help with that. And you know, that really that benefit may be a very big help in being able to afford, you know, some type of assisted or adult home. So all of it takes time. And then if let's say they do identify a couple places or two or three places that they really would like to see, me or Renee set them up with a tour. So instead of a senior or a caregiver reaching out to the communities directly, we usually set those tours up for them and, you know, set up a day of touring or two or three tours spread out over a week. And then we check in with them, see how that goes. Often we will meet families for tours as well.
Jay Marie, Kim. We do have a caller. We have Art from Saratoga Springs.
Hi. Good morning, Art.
Good morning. I'd like to have you answer a question on gifting. And okay. How do you execute it, and when would you use it?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part. How would you what?
How would you execute it? How you go about doing it? And when would you use gifting?
So do you mean gifting out of your own assets, or are you talking
yes,
about
it? Yes. Say someone has to go into a nursing home, and how do you...
Okay. Sure. So gifting assets, so if you want to gift assets out of your name and you're eyeing, you know, thinking of doing that to be eligible for a nursing home, it has to be done 5 years before the date that you apply for the nursing home.
Okay.
So that's one of the, you know, you have to plan ahead, okay?
Yep.
And there's many ways you can get the money out of your name. You could gift directly to individuals. The risk with that, however, is if you need a nursing home in the next 5 years, you would have to get that money back, right, to pay for the nursing home. And okay. You may not be able to get that back. You can also gift into a trust. And then a trust holds the money for your beneficiaries. And that sits there and holds the money. It's a little bit more protected.
And that's still the five-year look back?
Yes, and that's still the five-year look back. Yes.
Okay. Now, if you have a joint account, is half the money still belong to one spouse and the other half belongs to the other spouse, so you can protect one half of your own?
Yes, so in a joint account, they're going to count half as yours and half as your spouse's. But if there's too much in that joint account, yeah, you can either take your name off of it or have the spouse open up a new account. That five-year look-back rule doesn't apply when you're transferring money between spouses. So there's more flexibility there.
Okay, so if someone has to go in the nursing home, you can move all the money from the joint account into one person's name?
Yes, absolutely. That's what you can do. And then mm-hmm. that helps that person eligible.
Okay. So all you do just take that person's name off the account.
That's right.
Oh, okay. And you can do that, and there's no five-year look-back period with that?
No, there's no five-year look-back period with that, so that's good in case you haven't done planning in advance. That's one way you can do it.
Okay, very good.
Okay, any other questions I can help you with?
No, you answered my question.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling. Have a great day.
Thanks for the answer. Bye-bye.
And we have another caller. We have Diana in Albany.
Good morning, Diana.
Good morning. You were talking about senior living, and mm-hmm. I was interested in doing that and getting rid of the house,
mm-hmm.
but I'm caught between affording it.
Mm.
How the rents are above what I make in my Social Security,
mm-hmm.
yet I don't qualify for assist, you know, for them to assist my payments.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do?
There's, Melanie, maybe if you can address that a little bit before the break, and we'll talk a lot about finance, this care in the after the break in the second half.
So Melanie, how do you help people look at the financial part of this?
Yeah, the financials are part of the needs assessment that I take. So I would ask everyone about their income and then, you know, what savings or other asset they might have. As well as I always ask if you're a widow of a veteran or if you were a veteran. So it depends on what type of housing, Diane, that you were looking into, whether you were looking into an assisted living type where you would have three meals a day and housekeeping, that type of home, or if you were just strictly looking at independent living. In independent living, there are subsidized senior apartments.
But I don't qualify.
Your income is a, you've looked into that and you've been
caught. I'm caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah.
And I don't know how to get around it because I really want to move into a senior housing.
Mm-hmm. So the least
is there a way to go about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Diane, you certainly could give me a call, and I could go through the assessment with you so that I can direct you toward maybe there's an apartment that you don't know about that has a rent you could afford. But I will
location becomes a problem too, of course.
Yes, that's often the challenge. I was going to say the least expensive senior apartment that we work with, it's a market rate senior apartment, 62 and older, is about $1,000 a month for rent plus
and
utilities.
That's not where you're getting it subsidized.
It is not subsidized, no. But there's two types of senior subsidized housing. One is through HUD, and the other is what we call tax, it's a tax credit property.
Uh-huh.
So many of the tax credit properties might have a bit higher income limit. So again, I'd really need to kind of talk to you about, you know, off the air, if you want to give me a call. You know, my service is free, so we could have a conversation at no charge to you. And I can, you know, tell you for sure if senior housing at market rate is out of, you know, your realm or if maybe there is something you could afford.
Okay. Melanie, can you give out your phone number, and then we'll take a break, okay?
Okay.
518-894-2-2-4-4-3. 3?
Yes.
And what is your name?
Melanie.
I thought that's what you said.
Thanks. Let me just repeat that number for everyone. It's 518-894-2443, and that's the number for Choice Connections. And thanks, Diane. I hope Melanie can give you some advice offline. And I think we are up to our break now, right, Ben?
As a matter of fact, we are. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm, Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we talk about your questions regarding estate planning, elder law, Medicaid, guardianship, and it's a call-in show. We are here to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900, and we'll be happy to answer your questions on any of those topics. And also, we have a guest today. We have Melanie Pratt from Choice Connections. And if you're just tuning in, she helps seniors explore housing options, whether it's the senior living, assisted living. She helps families walk through that whole process. And if you have any questions about housing options, please call in and Melanie will help you. And Melanie, can you just give out the contact information for Choice Connections if people want to touch base with you later?
Sure. Yes. My number, our direct number is 518-894-2443. 518-894-2443. Our website is www.choiceconnectionsny.com. And if you'd like to email us, it would just be info@choiceconnections.com.
Thank you. And if you can hang around and see if we have some more questions about housing. And we're going to talk a little bit now about the financial piece of this, because that is important to people about how they can finance, their stay in an assisted living. And, you know, Kim and I, we talk a lot about Medicaid and community Medicaid and how that gives you care at home. But what many people don't realize is that there are some assisted living facilities that do take Medicaid. And I know, Melanie, if you want to just talk a little bit, I know there aren't a whole lot of facilities like that, but there's a few that maybe you could just talk about how people can sort that out.
Right. Yeah. And again, I am not a Medicaid expert. I direct that to the experts, such as yourself. But if someone's income and assets are at a certain level, I can direct them. I can pretty much say, yes, this is the direction you need to go. And of course, medically, if you're appropriate for assisted living, and the assets are such, then yes, maybe a Medicaid assisted living is needed. There are a number of facilities in the greater capital region, but the majority of assisted living are private pay. So this becomes a bit of a challenge in terms of location, right? For a family, they may be in an area where their loved one will end up a half an hour away because it's the closest Medicaid facility. But many of our clients will often choose to move to a Medicaid facility actually paying privately to begin with, and then transition to Medicaid because their assets are just above the Medicaid levels. But then others might, work with you and do the Medicaid application first and transition in. It's a little bit of a different process, they tell me, in terms of, the medical the paperwork that's needed when you're on Medicaid to transition into a what we call assisted living program, the ALP, we call them, assisted living. But they do provide the same care, right, as an any other assisted living. The three meals a day, housekeeping, laundry, transportation, case management, activities, personal care, assistance bathing, dressing, medication management. And so it's the same care as private pay assisted living.
Right, it is. And it's unfortunate there's not more of them, but it is an option. And I know there are, you know, a few more openings. Well, since I started doing this probably 15, 20 years ago, there are certainly more available than there were back then.
Still
not enough, right?
J. Marie, Kim, we have another caller. We have George from Johnstown.
Hi, good morning, George.
Good morning. Could you folks just run through briefly the Medicare rules in relationship to the assets that a couple can keep if one of them were to go into a nursing home?
Oh, sure, absolutely, not a problem. So basically, I'm going to give out the numbers, but there are exempt assets and non-exempt assets, which we can talk about. But generally, the numbers are it's about $16,000, I'm just rounding, that the individual who's going into the nursing home can keep, and their spouse can have about $75,000 in the spouse's name. And you can transfer assets to the spouse to get that balance right. But on top of that...
Did you say 16 and 75?
I did.
Okay.
Now, there's some assets that don't count. Those numbers are really for your money in the bank or your investments. Your home is an exempt asset. Your retirement account is exempt. So some things you have aren't going to count towards that limit. So you may even have more money than that. But if it's in a retirement account, it's exempt and you can qualify.
Okay, now when you say the retirement account, that's like IRAs and stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely. That's either an IRA or...
Is that just the total value of the IRA or just the interest?
No, the total value of the IRA is exempt. So the interest part, the income is a different story. Medicaid counts the income that you receive from that retirement account as available income, but the retirement account itself is exempt.
So the person going in the home can keep $16,000 and the spouse can keep $75,000 of the jointly held assets. Am I correct?
That's correct. Right.
Okay. And how much income is the nursing home person allowed?
That's right where I was going next. You read my mind.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine. In terms of the income, the person in the nursing home really can't keep any income. They can only keep $50 a month. The next step is to look at the spouse and see the spouse is allowed to keep about $3,600 a month of income. So the spouse, either if they have their own income that equals $3,600, they can keep it. Or if they're less, they can take some income from the spouse who's in the nursing home to bring them up to $3,600 and keep that. And then after that, anything left has to go to the nursing home.
Okay. So they don't really segregate it out as to whether the spouse had a pension in their name and the nursing home resident has a separate pension. Both pensions would be accessible to hit these numbers. Am I correct?
Yes, if the spouse, they are both accessible, right, if the spouse is below that $3,600.
Okay, so they're basically treated as one.
Yes. And
the total income. It's the total, I guess you'd call it family income.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there can be times where, let's say, the spouse who's not in a nursing home has, you know, more than $3,600, then that means
the spouse who's in the nursing home has, you know, I don't know, 4,000 of income. That all has to go to the home.
So and all income is counted. Social Security, pension, savings, investments, all income is counted. Am I correct?
You're correct. All income is counted, right? Social Security, pension, and then don't forget the money you have to take from your IRA. That's counted also.
Okay. Well, that's counted on the income side or on the asset side?
On the income side.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, thank you very much. You've given me a reasonably good explanation in a short period of time, and I thank you.
You're welcome. That's great timing for that question because we were talking about Medicaid and qualifying for assisted living. And basically, those are the numbers that we look at when you're applying for Medicaid, whether it be for home care, whether it be for assisted living or nursing home. You know, you have to meet these financial eligibility requirements. But if you have more money than these amounts that we just talked about, you can put money in a trust. Right. If your income is too high, there's a trust you can use for that, at least for community Medicaid. So there's many different nuances in how you can apply for Medicaid and depending on which program you're applying for. So if you have any questions, please give us a call at 518-476-5900.
Jay Marie.
Yes.
And Kim.
Yeah, sure.
And Melanie. Everybody's that's there. We do have another caller. We have Andy in Saratoga Springs.
Hi, good morning, Andy.
Yes. The situation where one partner is in a nursing home and the other partner is not, in relation to said he can keep $3,600 a month, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, anything over $3,600 has to go to the nursing home. Isn't there a 25%?
You are very smart. Yes, you are. So, yes, that amount that the spouse can keep, that's the spousal amount that they're allowed to keep, $3,600. But if they have more money, more income, I should say, per month, then the nursing home asks them to contribute 25% of their excess income. So you're right. If you have more than that, there is a contribution you would have to pay to the nursing home.
All right. So in other words, let's say you've got an income of $4,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That $400 right. would tax 25%, and you would be able to keep anything over the 25%, is that correct?
That's right. So in your example, you can keep $3,600, and then out of that extra $400, you would only have to pay $100 a month to the nursing home and keep the balance. So,
and then what if you had a part-time job? How do they determine how this payment is going to be set up?
So if you have a part-time job, that income does go into the calculation. You know, I know part-time jobs can sometimes vary from, you know, week to week or month to month. So they would probably look at your tax return for last year and come up with an average of what you earned. Okay. And then add that to your income and see if you need to make a contribution.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Some great questions about Medicaid eligibility.
Right. And I was going to say that it's all part of the puzzle that we use when we're working with clients to help them kind of try to decide what the best options are for them out there. You know, we don't look at just the Medicaid piece. We kind of look at, you know, we pull all these pieces together, like the housing piece and the care piece and the financial piece so that we can help folks really make a decision and make a choice that's going to work for them. No, not just in the short term, but for, you know, for the long term as well.
That's right. We have to really pull all these pieces together. And the way we work is I will talk to clients about the legal and financial side of it. And Kim is our
I keep wanting to call you a geriatric care manager. I guess that is what you are. Oh, you're not geriatric, right?
Well, I don't know. I do qualify for some of the senior housing that's out there after listening to Mel talk about some of the eligibility and age. So I guess I could be in that group now.
But Kim meets with families just like you do, Melanie, and Kim is really helping them figure out what type of care they need at home, what resources are available to them. You know, if it looks like they can't stay at home, then someone like Melanie can help them out with looking at options. So it takes a whole team, or the phrase that they say, it takes a village, right, Kim?
Right.
It's one of the things that we often talk about. I mean, you know, we'll sit together and kind of brainstorm as a group to say, well, this is the situation we have. You know, what are some of the options that a family could have? Because so often, we all know this to be true, that, you know, we work with families for a while before they really decide to make a particular decision. And sometimes during that time, unfortunately, much to Mel's point, you know, there's an incident or an event that happens that then sort of changes the circumstances and what the eligibility is. So we really do try to work with them to find the most appropriate option and really something that fits. And, you know, we always try to encourage people to plan as far ahead in advance so that the option, you know, the pool of options is much broader. There's nothing worse than working with somebody and saying, this is really going to be the only thing that's going to work because, you know, either somebody waited too long or they just couldn't make a decision or, you know, now we're starting to see wait lists too a lot of these communities that are out there. And some of the wait lists can be quite long, right, Mel?
Oh, yes. Especially in the realm of memory care assisted living, which is, you know, a higher level of care in and memory and dementia specific, there is definitely a wait list for those types of communities, yes.
Jane Marie,
and in terms of,
Kim, I'm sorry, we do have another caller. We have Carol from Schenectady.
Hi, good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I do have a question. Say you're private paying for assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
And you run through your money. Do they allow you to stay there, or what happens?
I have heard some places will let you stay there, but I'll let Melanie answer that. Maybe you're more familiar with some of the options out there.
So, yes and no. So I would say the majority of... I don't know if I want to split it up that way. There are some communities in our area that take a financial application and they will be looking for a certain amount of asset to cover usually 2 to 3 years of private pay means. And if you do have that and you move there and let's say now you're there 4 years and your assets are running low, if you're still appropriate for their care, they would work with you on what you could afford. So there's that type of community. They're not in a Medicaid. They're not going to accept Medicaid. But that is why they take the application, because they have that type of program. And then there are assisted living that the majority of the building is private pay, but they will apply for, let's say, 10 Medicaid, quote-unquote, beds. And so if you do run low on funds, and typically these communities also are looking for a minimum of 2 to 3 years private pay, in other words, you wouldn't be on Medicaid when you move there. You would be private pay when you move there. But if you were to run out of funds and there was an available, quote, bed, Medicaid apartment, I guess you could say, you could transition to Medicaid and stay. There really aren't many that have that program. I would say the majority of families transition onto Medicaid and transition either to skilled nursing or to a Medicaid-assisted living. They actually do make a move at that point.
Would the care be the same, Melanie?
Yeah, well, there's different levels of care within assisted living. The ALP licensure, which is the Medicaid licensure, can provide a certain level of care. So if you were in a assisted living that was providing a very high level of care, what we might call enhanced assisted living, you may not be eligible for a Medicaid assisted living. So in that case, you may need to look into the skilled nursing options, which all of the skilled nursing options accept Medicaid. Some skilled nursing, though, are really, you enter in private pay as well. But of course there are Medicaid beds available in nursing homes. And you would, if you were beyond the assisted living level, the Medicaid assisted living level, the nursing home would be your only option. If you were living in a strictly private pay assisted living, of course.
And so if you're in assisted living, you run out of money, they'll put you in a nursing facility, and Medicaid will take over?
Essentially, yeah, that's kind of summing it up. The case manager, which, you know, or the staff, the nursing staff of the assisted living, they should work with you. You know, they need a safe discharge, right?
Right.
So, you know, what I always advise families, let's say that the asset is running low. Don't necessarily wait until you're at the Medicaid level. You may choose to make a move, whether to a nursing home or a Medicaid assisted living, with some private pay means left.
Okay.
You know, if you started in assisted living with $300,000 and now you're down to $60,000, right, you may want to consider a move at that point where you are private pay, and then you transition while in that facility that accepts Medicaid. You know, I know some people can't go do that, but that is, even some assisted living would advise you on that.
Okay.
It gives you some more options, I think, is quite right, if you have some.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to decide whether you want to do this in a trust or whether you want to do it with private pay.
Yes, absolutely. Now, keep in mind, if you're in a assisted living where you did disclose, you know, your finance, you wouldn't be able to convert. Well, I that's kind of getting into the weeds, but you do disclose your finances with some assisted living prior to moving in. So, you know, the trust could be an issue with some communities.
Okay.
You know, with eligibility requirements.
Do you think assisted living would take private pay over someone with a trust?
Well, really, I always tell families assisted living is a month-by-month rental. And we think of it, we kind of mix it up with a nursing home where, you know, they, or some facility that automatically debits your monies. You actually write the check each month, or you authorize an automatic payment every month to assisted living. So, you know, in order to move, you would give your 30-day notice. So, you know, you're not obligated to stay after that 30-day notice. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay. You know, you just don't know if you're going to be able to stay there, or someone in your family is going to be able to stay there after their money runs out. What do they do?
Well, you would have that kind of, you should be right open with the assisted living on what the finances are currently. And really talk to the administration if the monies are running low, because you should do some forward planning.
Okay. All right.
That's yeah. And see if, yep. you know, when see if maybe you they would like work with you.
Getting to that point, then you've got to do something about it.
Absolutely. Be proactive.
Okay. Can you, Jane Marie, can you set up a trust at that point with hopefully a look back of 5 years?
Yes, we are coming up to the end of the hour, but I will say yes, a trust can definitely work in today's plans with assisted livings. And of course, the farther in advance you can set up a trust, the better, but yes, you can do some things even as you're running to the end there.
Okay, that answered my question. Thank you very much. I appreciate your advice.
You're welcome.
Real quick, we have Francine from Niskayuna.
Hi. Well, I was just calling. I was actually a client, so I was happy to hear Melanie on the phone, because she did help me place my 90-year-old dad, and it was such a smooth process, and it was easy to trust her to pre-select the places and take me on the tour. So I was just calling to say how easy she made it as a client in placing my dad.
Thank you. That's really great to hear.
Thank you. A very informative show. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Glad to hear that. So, Melanie, why don't you give out your phone number one last time, and then I think we are running it. We won't have time for any more questions. But thanks, Melanie, for joining us and giving us information about how to find housing.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, with that shout-out from Francine, I'll give a shout-out to you, Jane Marie, that you did help my family, and that was smooth and really wonderful. We were really so pleased with your help as well. So my number is 518-894-2443.
Thanks,
Melanie. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.